We found Theodosian harbor in this excavation. It was a huge Byzantine harbor. We found 37 Byzantine shipwreck in this harbor, and also lots of organic and inorganic objects, amazing amphoras, shipwrecks, rigging equipments, and also a Neolithic village.
Hello and welcome to the Dive and Dig podcast, taking you on an underwater journey across the ancient world from the Stone Age through to the late Roman period. My name is Lucy Blue.
And I'm Bethany Hughes.
And this week we're going to travel to Turkey, but we won't be getting wet. However, we will be discovering over 30 shipwrecks.
But in somewhere which is just incredible. I mean, Lucy, you and I are lucky because we talk about a lot of amazing places and things, but this is a site that is pretty close to the historic centre of Istanbul, overlooking the Sea of Marmara. And basically what happened is that there's been a lot of building work in Turkey. They've built bridges under the Bosphorus for road and for rail. They built a whole metro system. And when they were sort of turning Istanbul back into a world-class city again, they've discovered this whole ancient world. And this includes this staggering harbour, as you say, from the kind of late antiquity, late Roman period, early medieval period.
Yeah, no, it's just, I think both of us have visited and it's just vast. It really is incredible. And the amount of work that's gone into revealing the harbours and the shipwrecks. So basically there are two key teams that have been working there from Istanbul University and also a slightly smaller American team from the Institute of Nautical Archaeology, or INA, Texas. And I was actually really lucky to talk to this guy, Michael Rees-Jones. He has such insight into just this amazing harbour, and I think this is a real dream for any archaeologist.
Definitely, definitely. It's a fantasy. It's a fantasy made flesh, Lucy. It's brilliant.
Thank you very much, Michael, for coming and you know, meeting and to talk to us a bit more about the, well, having visited the site at various stages of its excavation and discovery and investigation. I mean, it really is, and this is verbatim, truly one of the most incredible discoveries I think that we have been lucky enough to make in the last number of decades, you know, possibly ever. I mean,
58,000 square meters, and that's just the main Yenikapı site, and that's not even the whole harbor. So it's pretty amazing. Yeah. In the 4th and 5th centuries, they decided to build four kind of new harbors. Two of them are on the southern shore. So the Theodosian harbor was the one kind of further west. And so it was the biggest one, and the other one is a Julian harbor, which is kind of closer to the palace, and we have a lot more textual information about that one, or more references. So
essentially, you've got this working harbor from roughly the 4th century through, well, certainly...
We're not entirely sure, but because the excavation's kind of a corridor through the middle, but at least the 11th century, but judging by the shipwrecks, so late 10th, early 11th century.
And so, as I understand it, there are something in the region of 37-ish shipwrecks, is that right?
Right, yes, in the excavated area. If they ever expand, there's going to be more, I'm sure. So, and there's lots of pieces of ships too. So if you count all the pieces, like, you know, there's loose keel timbers and things. So the total number is probably more than that, actually. So.
And I also understand that you've got a range of different types of vessels.
Yes. A 5th century, 6th century, roughly, to the 11th. And there's a lot of change in construction. But for the team I worked with, we excavated 8 of the shipwrecks with the Institute of Nautical Archaeology, under Jamal Pulak. And we had 6 that we're just calling round ships because they're roughly sort of cargo ship types. And, you know, it's based on the shape. Roughly, so you could argue about the terminology. And then 2 of them are long, narrow ships, which are probably road galleys, so they're probably warships. So we have different sizes for the round ships. We got little kind of rowboats that might put up a small lateen sail or that kind of thing, to very large cargo ships. So But the average size is usually about 15 meters, which is pretty typical.
And are you able to date these specifically to different periods within, I mean, by the stratigraphy or their cargo?
We can date the ships from the stratigraphy. Some of them have associated artifacts. The way they sank is or were deposited is kind of a bit of a mystery sometimes. We have some that are clearly very old. They're kind of banged up and abandoned as derelicts. And then we have some that seem to be, still usable or fairly new. And a couple of them are definitely pretty new. There's no hull repairs or anything. And
no, some of them had cargo in, didn't they? I mean,
there's three that have cargo, at least. So the team I worked on one of them, YK-1. And Istanbul University worked on two of the other ones. I think it's YK-35 and 12. So there's a 5th century and a 9th century one. So YK-1 was interesting because it was full of amphoras. So it had these wine jars, basically. They're probably wine. They have pitch in them. And it sank, and it was probably in a storm because it was in a big deposit of sand. It was about a meter thick. And the side of the ship was preserved, which is really strange, which is very unusual, as you know, probably for working on shipwrecks. So the jars kind of shifted on top. So we have the sides, and then we've got a few bits of the bottom. We have the keel. So it seems to have been sunk, and then they lost track of it. And also it had two big iron anchors, which are quite valuable. And if you look at other Byzantine shipwrecks, they recycle jars, they recycle anchors. It's a big piece of iron. They cost a lot of money. So somebody would take that if they could find it. So most of the shipwrecks we're finding seem to have been picked over, or they might have missed a few objects, but they sank for possibly in storms. So another of the shipwrecks we worked on was YK-11, which is the earliest. It's 7th century. And it's the hull remains are amazing because there are more repair pieces than original pieces. And so
I have to say, yeah. I love a repair. I really do.
Yeah,
love
yeah,
a repair.
Yeah, yeah. So my colleague Rebecca Ingram, who works at IA, was working on this, and she was completely baffled for a while because you'd get 70 nail holes on a frame, and then there's 20 in the planking, and she says, what's happening here? So they did several overhauls. They basically ran this boat into the ground.
I mean, it's just so complex, isn't it? I mean, right. When you think of the scale, how do you actually go about starting to excavate an area on this scale with so much deep time beneath you?
It was a salvage excavation, so we're working where they're putting the subway station and the construction equipment. So
yeah, I guess you've got a train coming behind you.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so there's a lot of pressure. They want you to move fast, so you want to get the your research priorities straight, but you also have to get the material out. So it was there was a lot of pressure on everybody throughout the process.
Obviously, this is. It started in 2004. Was that when it was?
Right, right.
So we're looking at 20 years almost now, and as you say, it's probably going to be a number of lifetimes. Before.
Yes.
But I mean, in terms of these initial discoveries, it's got to have made quite an impact, not just in our understanding of the specific nature of the vessels, the cargo, the variety, the change over time, as you've hinted at, because I know that the construction approach has changed in that period for the way that they built boats. But also in those bigger picture things about what this means in terms of understanding what's going on in Constantinople, what's going on in the region. Are there any sort of take-home messages you've got from that, or do you think it's just too early to tell, really?
What we're getting here is a lot about daily life and a lot about how the economy works. And I think the people who lived in Constantinople, a lot of them would just take it for granted. And because, it's just the normal functioning of everyday life. So we miss that if we're studying later periods, and we can see, the type of boats they're using. And then also we can see how the city sort of adapted over time, because in the 4th or 5th century, it's really a lot like, Rome at the early empire, where they're building big artificial harbors. They build portus and things like that. And then over time, this harbor area, they kind of adapt. It silts up. But the ships they start using, there's a couple of real big ones from the early period. But over time, you get shallow draft vessels, and the activity starts moving further east. And then they build another pier there in the 10th century. And, if the ships, they have a draft of about a meter, you can bring it into shallow water. Somebody can wade out and unload everything. So it's they're actually kind of adapting the space.
Okay, this is a nasty question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What do you think is the most, your favourite, this is the thing that, you know, you always get asked, what's your favourite find? Or what do you think was of most significance in terms of, not necessarily things you found, but overall,
right,
that people just go, wow.
Some of the edible bones are great. They had a whole camel skeleton that seemed to have been buried in one of these episodes, so that was pretty cool. I think the galleys are pretty impressive because you read about them, but nobody had ever found one from this period. I mean, it's impressive to see huge pieces of wood perfectly preserved. I mean, some of the galley planks were 10 meters long, and, you know, they're these giant trees that they cut down. And I guess personally, some of the organic materials are really impressive to me, where they find, you know, like a child's shoe, like a little leather sole. At one point, we're excavating, we're taking apart the shipwreck YK-14, which I worked on for my dissertation, and I was excavating underneath, and I pulled a leaf out, and it was still green. And it was green for about 20 minutes before it darkened. That blew my mind. That was really cool.
It's so beautiful. I mean, I had a similar incident actually on Lambert with very dry, and it's that immediate connection, isn't it? Where that point in time, it can, and I love the way that you said it changed as well. That's incredible.
Yeah, because it's just a moment, and when you first excavate, the wood is really, it looks just like, you know, it could have been cut down yesterday, and then sometimes it kind of darkens over time, but that's seeing some of that, especially actually with one of the galleys we worked on, YK-4. There was a second ship that was excavated on top of it. So this is one of the things we think it was because of storms. But there was ore ports preserved. And so I was watching some of these guys excavate with a hose, and then we see this thing open up, and then there you could see the ore port. And we had the spaces for 2.5, basically. So that gives us... So it's really, really useful for reconstruction, but it was also like, oh, that's where they were sitting, you know, so to row the ship. So it was really, really fantastic.
I mean, you've just had such an amazing experience as an archaeologist.
Yeah,
you know,
I got lucky picking up
bits of broken pot and think, you know. But that, I mean, what an experience to have in your lifetime. Not many people have.
Right. Yeah, I was very
such
lucky.
An opportunity. No. And all the 300 or 600 or whatever other people as well. But I mean, to be able to actually deal with, you know, personally with those artifacts and see things coming out of the ground like that. That's what archaeology is all about, isn't it, really? It's that point of contact with the past and the excitement that brings. And, I'm not saying I'm jealous at all.
That story about the green leaf, what an incredible thing. So if that's from YK-14 and it's over 1,000 years old, it's just...
Yeah,
that's a stellar moment to remember.
Well, because it is almost being back, transported back that 1,000+ years, because that leaf is now changing.
Yes.
But I, you know, one thing I did reference a similar find. It wasn't, but this was I found. You know, when sometimes you sit on the side of a hill and you pick a bit of grass and you like knot it into another bit of grass. I found that. On an archaeological, okay, it was a port site, but one of these dry sites that you have in on the Red Sea coast of Egypt. And I think what was so special about it was that you had that very particular connection with an individual, and you were literally transported back to the point where somebody just idly twisted some bits of grass.
Gosh,
probably wouldn't have been grass, but straw, hay. Anyway,
and it's always a petrifying thought, isn't it? What we all do in our lives. Random, idle, stupid things that some archaeologist, in the case of Egypt, you know, in 4,000 years, is going to go, oh, look at them. They were really bored that afternoon or whatever. Or we're having a kind of mindful moment. No, I mean, it's you can't... It's an incredible sight to go to. And Mike was talking about galleys a lot to you. I mean, for you, Lucy, what is the textbook definition of a galley?
Yeah, I mean, so galleys, as he hinted at, they're essentially long, thin, sleek, fast vessels, sometimes partially decked, quite often just open boats with lots of men at or rowing quickly, because they were used effectively for, you know, battle scenarios. I mean, quite often they had sails as well, but that was their primary use, was that they could manoeuvre them really expediently. And that's what's so remarkable, because they weren't carrying
storing large amounts of cargo. When they wreck, a cargo boat has, you know, amphora or stones, you know, ballast or whatever it is. Whereas the galleys were just had people, and that was their only weight that they were carrying, essentially. Mm-hmm. So that means that quite often the hulls would just float off. So in this context, when we have this harbour which is covered in silt or, you know, buried over time, you have these boats that we rarely find in underwater. And so when he was talking about, you know, the ore ports and really being able to see them, and we get very, very obsessed with how many, you know, how many rowers you could have in a boat, and that really helps give an insight into those sorts of things. So again, we're getting back to the mechanics of how these things work.
And what about the harbour itself in this case? Because I love the fact that you proudly describe yourself as a harbour expert. You love a harbour. You love repairs as well. Love a harbour.
Well, the repairs again are about people, aren't they? But harbours, I think the thing about harbours is they're challenging. And this actually, Yenicap is a very good example, because it was a good place to shelter a vessel. It probably was adapted from a natural anchorage, and over time they adapted the harbour, they built new jetties. And this is the other thing, you've got sort of 1,000 years of different types of materials, from stone to possibly hydraulic concrete, and most definitely lots of wooden jetties. So I know it's not quite as exciting as a shipwreck with amphora in it, but I do get, you know, fairly... yeah, it's something that makes me happy.
Revel in your happiness. And it is an incredible place. We've both visited the harbour itself as it was being excavated, which is just, you know, something I'm never, ever, ever going to forget. Just see those pretty much complete ships and boats just in situ there. I mean, just an extraordinary, extraordinary sight. And then also I've gone back to Istanbul, the city I love, and I've been to the conservation labs in action. I think you can hear, when I walk in, I think you can hear in my voice how happy I am, because I went to meet Professor Ufuk Kotrabas from Istanbul University there.
Professor, it is such an honour to be in this lab, because this is the most incredible project. I know it's one of the biggest archaeological projects there's been the world, apart from anything else. The level of preservation is incredible. I mean, we're looking now. So these planks that we're looking at, these are from the 9th century, I think. Is that right?
Yes. These timbers belong to a galley, rarely encountered underwater excavations. We found 6 galleys in the Yenikap excavations. You know, these are the first examples of the galleys. Before this, we have no information about the galleys. Mm-hmm. Of course, there were some pictures, manuscripts, but not real shipwrecks. So we excavated all the galleys.
Explain to me what I'm looking at now.
Betan, these are waterlogged timbers belong to Yenikapı 16 galley. You know, we are inside the laboratory, and there are lots of ship timbers here. We are working on shipbuilding technology and conservation. These are waterlogged wood, but not conservated. But this one is belong to Yenikapı 12 shipwreck, and we finished its conservation with freeze-drying technique. Mm-hmm. First of all, we impregnated polyethylene glycol, and then we used a freeze dryer machine. So if you want, you can hold, you know.
Of course I want to hold it. That's incredible. So, oh my gosh.
9th century shipwreck, Yenikapı 12. And also this is a floor timber of the shipwreck. You can see there is a resin here. We call colophon resin. And also some caulking materials here.
So this is what's keeping, because it's completely different. So this is what's helping keep it waterproof.
Exactly. They were covering all the ships outside and also inside with this resin.
Can I just say what a total joy it is to hold this? Because I was here when this was being excavated.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's the most incredible ship anyway. Yeah, and to get to touch a bit of it. So so this is 1,100 years old, this bit of wood that
I'm
holding.
Exactly.
That's amazing, and it looks like I've just picked it up from my log store at home today. So incredible. And to think where this has been. This has travelled the Mediterranean. It's picked up cargo from the Black Sea.
Yeah, most probably this ship coming from Black Sea.
The things that have been preserved here are unlike anything else anywhere in the world. So you have, I know, rope, ship's rope that's been preserved, and cherries in pots. And like the brazier of the captain with his meal on. I mean, it's just staggering what's survived.
You know, Yenikapı shipwrecks protected very well. You know, I'm an underwater archaeologist. I excavate some shipwrecks under the water, but it is not always fine shipwrecks like Yenikapı shipwrecks. This shipwrecks protected very well because there was a river called Lycos. It flows inside the harbor. In salt water, in the sea, there are some ship worms. For underwater excavations, they are damage all the woods. But in Yenikapı, in this freshwater environment, they couldn't leave. That's why they protected very well. And also, this Lycos River brought lots of silt, alluvium inside, and also the Sea of Marmara brought some sediments. So rapid silting is the key. That's why this organic remains protected very well.
So, I mean, that's really amazing. I visited the site, I saw the excavation, but to actually hold the timbers must have been quite incredible.
It was incredible. I was like a child in a sweet shop. I mean, it felt so privileged. It was quite light, surprisingly light. But just as you say, that thing that you're touching, it's such a corny phrase to say you're touching history, but you are. And your hand is where the hand of a sailor, you know, the hand of a merchant had been. And also, I think, particularly because that ship had travelled so much, so it looked like it had gone right the way around the Mediterranean and probably travelled and stopped off at the Black Sea to collect cargo. So, my goodness, you know, if those timbers could talk, the stories that they would tell would be just staggering.
I mean, I visited, but I didn't actually watch the excavations, but you literally were there when they were uncovering. Was it which?
Yes.
Which one?
I was probably, I was there in 2015, I think, or 2014. And I just managed to sort of talk my way in, and I was really lucky. And, you know, mud everywhere, incredible, these sort of tents just covering the ships that had already been excavated, that were being very carefully covered in water, obviously, to keep them damp. I actually fell into one of the excavation ditches.
I didn't damage anything.
Quite right. Your priority is absolutely right. I didn't damage a thing. I sort of flung myself back into the mud so that I made sure I didn't, you know, exactly, I didn't disturb anything as I went down. No, amazing. Just this sort of extraordinary buzz of activity, of archaeologists working and, you know, bulldozers going and shifting. And as Michael said right at the beginning, it was a race against time, you know, because the priority really for people was getting that metro built. So it really was a rescue excavation. No, it was remarkable to see. And I particularly remember that I wasn't called that yen. I don't think, but Yenikapı 12, the boat Yenikapı 12. So I saw that being excavated as well. Packed tight with these amphorae that contained wine. And I sort of particularly loved that because Constantinople, the city of Constantinople, Byzantium as it came to be called, was often described as a city of drunkards. People used to write a lot about it and say, like, basically, you go there, there's a Menander the playwright says you go there and you come away with a head for four, you know, because you've just been boozing all night. So it's rather kind of extraordinary to see these amphorae packed with wine in the ship. But no, it was a really, really magical, magical place. And I talked to Professor Ufuk about that particular wreck as well.
We found intact amphorae inside, and also a small compartment close to the stern we called bulkhead. Inside this place, there were a stove like brazier, a jug, a casserole bowl, a beaker, bulk of olive seeds, and cherry stones inside a reed basket. You know, it was a time capsule frozen in time. We dated 9th century, this shipwreck. So we understand that this shipwreck sank in the summer, mm-hmm. because cherries ripen in end of May or June in the region of Marmara.
The details of all of this, of everything you've got here, is just so intriguing. Yeah, yeah. But there's also a bigger picture story, isn't there? The mm-hmm. fact that the harbour's been made at all, and the fact it's so busy, tells us.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
this was
yes.
a city that was really expanding.
Mm-hmm. In Theodosian era, he built this harbour for grain trade, because grain, you know, better than me, grain is really important for cities, for big cities, also for this kind of huge emperors. They were bringing grain from Egypt in Alexandria to directly Constantinople. Constantinople was the center of the Mediterranean and also center of the world in that time. It was a really cosmopolitan city, connected all around the Mediterranean and world.
Amazing. And you can just imagine the people here, you know, the languages and exchanging mm-hmm. goods mm-hmm. And ideas. I mean, so exciting.
It was so colorful. During the excavation, our colleague, Professor Dr. Vedat Onar, he found lots of animal bones, more than 60 different animals. But horses was really interesting, because they brought all the goods with ships, but after that, from harbor to bazaar, you know, other storage places, they used horses. Mm-hmm. This shows us the capacity of the harbor. You know, it was a rush, and you know, everybody was working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if we should imagine it then, it would have been humming with people and sounds and languages,
exactly.
you know, from across the Mediterranean, the Black Sea, and beyond.
Exactly.
Amazing. And I have to ask you one thing. Okay. In this incredible lab, you've got goldfish in some of the tanks. Why? Why have you got goldfish there?
In the laboratory, we are using some biocides against biologic attack. But inside the laboratory, we are using goldfish against larvae of mosquito.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
They are eating this larvae of mosquito. And first, two goldfish belong to my son. You know, their names was really comic. Guardian and Dead Angel.
That is fantastic. So they're kind of lab assistants and pets here.
Exactly.
Brilliant. Well, listen, thank you for your work. Honestly, you're illuminating a whole world, and I know it's really tricky managing all of this. So it's just splendid.
Thank you, Bethany. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Goldfish.
I know.
That's so bizarre.
I know. There was this whole sort of like ornamental pond virtually of goldfish, but they're munching away the mosquito larvae very effectively.
Yeah, I know. That's really fascinating. I mean, they've got a load of work to do, though.
Yes.
There's just tank upon tank upon tank in the area. And, I mean, conservation, as we know, takes such a long time.
Yeah.
But there's all those different things they're finding. I mean, not just the ships and the amphora, but the bones and the camel skeletons. Didn't somebody even reference a child's shoe and the cherries? That was just...
The cherries, they obviously loved their cherry. Well, who wouldn't love a Turkish cherry, you know, that ripens in May or June? It's absolutely delicious. But you just imagine the captain and the sailors that were sharing them and, you know, get a little bit of a kind of, you know, power, sugar rush, sweet, natural sugar rush to get them going. Now, and so it's the individual finds that were incredible, but also just that, again, the range of age of the boats. So from that, you know, late Roman, late antiquity period, right the way through the medieval world. So it really is this sort of snapshot of this of the city, which is at that point, particularly in the kind of early medieval period, it's becoming one of the most important cities there has ever been in the world, one of the biggest and one of the busiest. Mm. So it's an extraordinary access to get into the lives of the people there.
Yeah, and the other thing I thought was really interesting from a sort of contemporary perspective is the importance of grain, because obviously at the moment that's something that we're struggling to get our hands on as well. And it just sort of gave us that, you know, that deep time reference to these key commodities that keep us all moving around and the planet ticking over, et cetera, et cetera. So I love the way that it's just so central to the Mediterranean, the Black Sea. It's like the centre of the world, as I think you've said.
Yeah, it is, definitely. And you're absolutely right about the grain. And again, we make a real mistake, I think, to talk about, you know, the perils of our hyper-globalised world. Globalisation starts a lot earlier than when we think. And exactly as you say, you know, at that point, you've got the new Rome, the second Rome, as Constantinople or Byzantium was often called. And that new Roman Empire needs to be fed as the old Roman Empire did. So you've got this grain coming in from Alexandria. Sometimes there's sort of stop-offs at Rhodes, but then making its way up into the city of Constantinople. No, it's a real reminder of the kind of hyper-connectivity of people and how we come to depend on those hyper-connections and need to, you know, protect them and nourish them and respect them rather than abuse them.
No, absolutely. They've got their work cut out, though.
They have. Well, one other thing I would say to anybody, an archaeologist, you know, when I last counted, there were 90,000 trays of archaeological objects that were discovered from that dig and, you know, from some of the other rescue digs in the site. So that's a lot of recording and analysis to do. So get yourself over to Istanbul.
It's an archaeologist's nightmare in some ways. I mean, obviously the information it holds is a dream, but in terms of processing, it's a lot to tackle. Well, I think they'll be there for some time.
I think they will. Instead, a lifetime of work for people if you want to go and move over there. But no, it's lovely. You found that with Michael, and I found that with Ufuk as well. Just talking to them, they're just in love with this place. You know, you can tell it's very tricky to manage, you know, in day-to-day terms. But what it reveals is remarkable. So it's a sort of a harbour of love, as well as a harbour of life. So we've been in this extraordinary world of the harbour of what is now modern-day Istanbul. Incredible things that have been discovered and yet more still to be discovered in the future. And you've been listening to us on the Dive and Dig podcast, a podcast made by the Honor Frost Foundation, a charity that supports maritime archaeological research right across the Eastern Mediterranean. So thank you for joining us, and thanks for listening, and listen to some of the other episodes with me and Lucy mumbling on about maritime archaeology and why it matters.